Welcome to the Truckers News Podcast. I'm David Hollis, the editor of Truckers News, and with me today is Bill Beely. He's a truck driver who's also a singer-songwriter, and he has a new album on the horizon after taking off more than a little time from recording. Welcome, Bill.
Good morning. How are you doing this day?
I'm well, thanks. Hey, let's start at the beginning for both trucking and your music. Which came first, and how did you get started as a driver and then as a musician?
Well, I got started as a driver after spending about 20 years in DJ work and putting concerts together for nightclubs in San Antonio and in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at a place called the Midnight Rodeo. And when I turned 50, I was told I was too old to do that job. So I was, I'm serious. And I said, well, you know, a lot of the acts that we've had in here over the last 6 to 8 months were older than me, including Waylon Jennings and Emmylou and a few others, Willie Nelson. I mean, the list went on. And so I was looking for a job. I, you know, didn't know what I wanted to do. And a friend of mine had driven a truck, and he said, if you can pass a DOT physical, you've got a job, basically. And they don't care how old you are, as long as, you know, you can stay awake and drive, I guess. But anyway, that's how my driving career started. But my music career started back in when I was in high school and played the folk coffee house clubs around South Texas and Oklahoma and also college coffee houses and stuff. Was on the circuit.
Now, when would that have been?
That was 1969, basically to the late 70s.
That's an interesting time in music.
Oh, it was a great time in music. It was there was a lot going on. It was all still pretty fresh and new. I was able to meet up and see a lot of people that became extremely big. Townes Van Zandt, Michael Murphy, who became Michael Martin Murphy, and all these guys were back in their early days at that time, back in the early 70s. And I don't know. I was sitting in a place one night and I saw that they were able to make a living doing something that I wanted to do, and that was my inspiration to get started. And I'd always been a songwriter. I'd made up lyrics to songs since I was a little kid, and so I got, I don't know, 15, I guess, 14 or 15, learned how to play guitar and put my words to music. And that was pretty much how it started. I got my first recording contract in 71, along with a writer's contract with Malico Sound Studios down in Jackson, Mississippi. And they were the one that was, it was Malico that put out the Passing Dream album, which later got reissued by Tompkins Square. I did an album on my own prior to that called Gallivantin' that I sold from the stage and the trunk of my car and that sort of thing. And that was what got me started was Gallivantin'. And then I went to Malico in 71. We did sessions in 71 and 73. There was a single released in 74 from those 73 sessions. And then there was a time in there of about two and a half years where nothing was going on with my music as far as getting any farther than that single. And it wasn't an easy time, you know, to be a singer-songwriter. I was just another face in the crowd, basically. And I mean, there was a lot of things going on back then. There was everybody from James Taylor to Gordon Lightfoot, to all of those kind of acts. And I mean, everybody that owned an acoustic guitar wrote a song. And so it just, you know, kind of sat there. And in 77, we cut the Passing Dream album, and came out in 79, and it was less than spectacular. We didn't really do anything or go anywhere. And so my wife was pregnant with our second child, and I said, well, it's time to get a real job. And that's when I started putting concerts together and DJing.
So you were still in the music business, but in a different way then.
Right. Yeah. I've always been in the music business in some fashion or form.
Well, and, as a younger singer-songwriter, who were your influences? Who did you look to? Who were you listening to at that time?
Oh gosh, everybody that was writing songs, people like Danny O'Keefe. He's a guy that did Good Time Charlie's Got the Blues. Danny O'Keefe, Tom Jans, he was an incredible songwriter that wrote Out of Hand, that Gary Stewart did. James Taylor, Gordon Lightfoot, Bob Dylan, Townes Van Zandt. That was basically the, you know, I mean, anybody that was writing music was something that I was listening to. I just, because they were the best at what they did, and I wanted to hone my craft, I guess, for lack of better terms. And every year back in those days, record companies contracted the artist to do an album every year. So there was a lot of great music coming out. I mean, there was every year you could just count on, wow, there's a new Buffy St. Marie album coming out. There's a new Tom Jans album coming out. There's a new whoever coming out. And each of their albums, I thought, were better than the last. And that was what I wanted to do too. And I was doing a lot of writing. Malico picked up about 30 of my songs, and which was basically the Passing Dream album and all the stuff that we had done in 71 to 74.
The next part of your career, DJ and setting up concerts, what kind of music were you working with? Who were you booking?
Country. It was, I was working in a small club down in San Antonio called The Gambler. And we brought in acts like, and you got to realize this is back in the 80s, the Bellamy Brothers, Gary Stewart, and he and I became pretty good friends. I really liked Gary. He was a good guy. John Anderson, folks like that. And then I got a job offer to go to work for a club across town, and they didn't so much put concerts together as I was basically the program director and the music director for the club. And the owner of that club wound up moving to Albuquerque, and I told him, I said, if you need somebody to do your music, give me a call. And he called me about a month later, and I went to Albuquerque, and it was a midnight rodeo there, 30,000 square foot nightclub. We opened up with Willie Nelson. I mean, that idea of the caliber of the music that we were booking in there. And we did everybody. I mean, it was one of the most remarkable experiences I've ever had. And I booked it for about 13 years.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. in the music business to stick around that long in one spot, isn't it?
Well, yeah, my wife and I don't like looking for jobs. I've been with Jack B. Kelly, or now Keenan Advantage Group, as it's called, for I think yesterday was either my 13th or my 14th year with them. So I don't like looking for jobs. I would rather stay in one spot. I'm not a hopper by any stretch.
Yeah. Hey, now let's fast forward more than a few years, and now you have a third album coming out in June.
Yeah.
First, what happened in that 40-year span to your music as a musician? And then, second of all, tell us about the new album, and it has a rather ominous title for a truck driver called Highways and Heart Attacks. How did that come to be, and what's on it?
Well, it's basically the follow-up to the Passing Dream album. How all this came about was Josh Rosenthal, who owns Tompkins Square, sent me a letter. And it was one of those "Are you still alive?" type of things. It was almost like one of those VH1 specials, "Where are they now?" And he said, "Are you the Will Veeley who did Passing Dream and Gallivant? And if you are, I'd really like to talk to you." And so I went, "Well, what the hell?" You know, so I gave him a call, and he asked me if I had ever thought about re-releasing those two albums. And I said, "I don't know if anybody, you know, really want to listen to them." And I couldn't get five people to listen to Passing Dream when it came out in 79. And he said, "Oh, I like it." And he says, "I want to do something with it." And I said, "Well, I've got the masters to Gallivant, because that's mine, a guy named Phil Pena, and I put it together." And I said, "There's no problem there." I said, "Malico has the Passing Dream album, so you'd have to go through them." And he got the rights from Malico he got the album rights. It's Passing Dream was only done on vinyl. He only released it on vinyl. Malico held the digital rights to it, and they didn't want to release a CD. They said, "Nobody buys CDs anymore." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, I must be that person doing that." But it was real interesting. Josh put them both out simultaneously in 17, and almost 40 years to the day that we recorded Passing Dream. And we did that in 77, the week of the 4th of July in 1977. And when I left the music business in 81, when my wife was pregnant with our daughter, my goal from the beginning, from back in the 60s, when I was just a kid in high school, was I wanted to be a songwriter. I didn't particularly want to be an artist. And so that was still my goal. And I got pretty lucky, I guess, from the standpoint that I had some folks in Nashville looking at my music. And we just never could get anything to connect. And I wound up getting so frustrated with it in the late 80s, which was when Jack McMurrell from the Midnight Rodeo asked me if I wanted to come to work for him up in Albuquerque. I was so ready to do something totally different from what I'd been doing. And so I packed up about, I don't know, two dozen half-finished songs, put them in my guitar case, and locked the case. And I didn't open up my guitar case for years. I mean, I just didn't want to have anything to do with writing. And when my grandkids came along, I'd pull out my guitar occasionally and, you know, play for them, but that was about it. And so I was concentrating just on this job of booking the best entertainment we could get into the New Mexico area. And and the Highways and Heart Attack album, the one that's coming out, I guess, in June, about half of that was songs I'd written as a follow-up to Passing Dream. So about half the songs on that album are songs from that. And the other half are songs that were in that half-finished stack in my guitar case. And just over the last 5 or 6 years, every time I'd open up my guitar case, play for one of my grandkids, then I went, hey, you know, I ought to work on that song. I ought to finish that song. And so that's what a lot of that stuff's from.
Interesting stuff. And now you have one song on there. Is it Highway 85?
US 85.
US 85. What's that about? And is that a trucker song?
Well, I don't know if it's a trucker song. My wife and I, Jack B. Kelly hauls cryogenics, liquid natural gas and liquid helium and liquid whatever, you know, nitrogen and stuff. And my wife and I used to take LNG into El Paso to the Sun Metro station down there. All the transit buses run on natural gas. And there's going down US 85, you go down US 85 off of 10 to get to Sun Metro's yard. And it's just a kind of a surreal place. On one side, you've got El Paso. On the other side, you've got Juarez. And we were driving down there one night, and I don't know what was going on, but I told my wife, I said, you know, this doesn't look like the city that Marty sang about. And I went, well, that's kind of a good line for a song. And then the next line was, it looks more like Tom Thumb's Blues with the rain wrung out. And it kind of wrote itself. And so everything on that, in that song, there's a, I don't know if it still is, this has been several years ago, but there was a mission for homeless people. And there's a big old sign that says Jesus lives, and there's all these kind of lost souls hanging around this place. And so that's part of the song. And there's a cemetery that just has been forgotten. And that's in the song. And so it's all this, whatever I was seeing running down US 85 is in the tune. And at Sun Metro, where we offloaded, you could throw a rock and hit Juarez. It's just right across, you know, a couple hundred yards away. And one night there was this kid looking across the river at us, and I was looking across the river at him and his city, and that's how the whole thing came about.
Interesting story. Very a very strong kind of story about a place, which a sense of place kind of story. That's interesting. So now what? More music, less driving? Will you be performing in support of Highways and Heart Attacks? What's the next step for you?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm 68 years old and a little tired of driving in the winter time. So, I don't know. It'd be nice to get something going from the album. If Josh needs me to play, I'll play. I'm going to be doing a release party thing down in San Antonio in June, and I haven't played in front of anybody in about 35 years, so it's going to be interesting. And Waterloo Records in Austin is going to do a thing on the album on the Saturday before, the day before, so I'm going up there for that. And I don't know. One part of me would like to do that, but another part of me really enjoys doing what I'm doing. I like driving a truck, believe it or not. And I just like this job a lot. And if something happens, it happens. I'm just going to kind of follow and see where it goes.
Now, exactly, what kind of driving are you doing then? You say that you team drive?
Yeah, my wife and I, we've been teaming for 9 years and still married.
And what are you driving these days? What kind of truck?
It's a Peterbilt. I'm a company driver, and I know. Mm-hmm. To the owner operators and the lease operators listening to your program, they'll probably shake their head or cringe when I say I enjoy being a company driver. You know, well, when I go in to get something done on the truck, I just sign for it and leave.
Yep. The good news is that Truckers News is aimed at company drivers, so you're in, dare I say,
oh, it
good
is.
Company.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, well, Will, what a delight. I mean, this is a great story of sort of two different careers, and it sounds like you've made the most of both of them.
Well, it's been interesting. You know, I asked Josh, I don't know, I guess maybe a week or so after he wanted to re-release those two albums, I said, do you ever, since you have a publishing company, do you ever look for new stuff? And he said, yeah. So I sent him a rough demo of three songs. All three of them wind up on the album. And he said, have you ever thought about going back in the studio? Because I'd asked my wife, or I, you know, I asked her, I said, you know, would you mind if I had the chance to go back in the studios? I said, it'd be a hoot. It's kind of a bucket list kind of thing, especially at the age of, you know, 68.
Well, you're and, just a kid. You're just a kid.
There
just
you
like
go.
Me.
There you go. Well, that's good. Yeah, I you know, it's weird. Age is such a weird thing. I don't feel 68. I look 68, but I don't feel 68. And when I had a heart attack a couple of years ago, it was right after those two albums had been reissued, my wife and I were in Wyoming picking up our next load, and the load wasn't there. And I'd been having chest pains for a couple of days. And I'm one of these people, I don't go to a doctor unless I've got bones sticking out of flesh. And when the plant said that load went out yesterday, and we're hauling liquid helium. They just don't disappear like that. And so it was like God tapped me on the shoulder and saying, "Hey, Will, I think I see some bones. You might want to go to a doctor." And so we drove into Rock Springs, Wyoming, and went to one of those walk-in clinics. And the guy says, "Well, you're not having a heart attack." And I said, "Well, that's good news." And I spent about an hour there going through all kinds of tests. And we went out and got back in the truck. And I got in the jump seat, and I looked at my wife, and I said, "Man, something's not right." So we went back in, and I don't know if it was a look on my face or my skin color or what it was, but all of a sudden he said, "I'm going to send you to the emergency room." Well, I went to the emergency room there in Rock Springs, and the doctor, after, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes, said, "You're having a heart attack, and we could fix you here, but you'd be better off in Salt Lake City." And so I was flown Air Med to Salt Lake City, Utah, to go to the University of Utah cardiac floor. And I was laying there thinking to myself, "Oh my God, we just got the house paid off and we're almost out of debt. And this is going to cost $100,000 flying to Rock Springs plus, you know." Anyway, thank God for Medicare and my insurance. And we were only out a couple grand, but it was real spooky the way that that went down. They put a stent in my heart, and I had a real come to Jesus moment with that. And got on the diet that they told me to get on, and now we eat mainly, I'd say 85-90% of the time, either fish, chicken, or turkey, and a lot of salad. And I've been able to lose a little weight. Don't have that truck driver look as bad as I did. And that's how the name of the album came about.
Boy, you came up with that the hard way.
Well, the producer, Jerry DeSecchi, was one that came up with the title. And because I wanted to call it, "It Only Took 40 Years for the, you know, for the." But
how appropriate. Yeah,
it was interesting. It's been an interesting couple of years with the re-release of the those two albums, and a whole new group of people, a whole new generation of people, really, hearing those songs. And when I went in the studio to cut the new album, how things had changed in 40 years. It's all digital now. There's no tape machines. It's just a whole different world. And real interesting. It was a whole different process. We did Passing Dream in a week. We recorded it in 5 days, live, pretty much live, very little overdubbing. And this was done, I went in and laid down the basic tracks with a bass and drums over a couple of day period of time. And then everything was layered on top of that over the next 6 months. So it was real interesting the way that that the process has evolved. And kids playing backup, I call them kids because we've got kids older than most of those guys. And so I was real surprised at how they picked up on what I was doing. And they did a great job. Have you heard any of it yet?
No, I haven't.
Josh, I'll ask Josh to, we'll get a copy in the mail to you as soon as it comes out.
There's, cool.
That way you've got a copy of the actual finished product.
Absolutely.
But, I was real impressed with it. My voice, unfortunately, sounded like a cross between Clint Eastwood and a Budweiser frog. But the spirit is there. I'll put it that way.
You know, it's worked all these years for Tom Waits like that. So, you know, you got to be doing something
well,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Hey, Will, thank you. What a delight. It's great to hear. It's great to talk with creative people. And it's great also to hear someone who's found a second life for their work. That's great.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. It's definitely interesting.
Good.
It was just nice to be able to do this at the age of 68. I mean, how many people get a second chance at something that they love? And I've been very fortunate. Josh has been a godsend.
So, that's great. Hey, Will, yeah. Thanks a bunch. Safe driving.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Take
Have a
care.
Good day.